Welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast with me, Kathy Love. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. Join me for cutting-edge interviews with leaders in the allied health and business fields, along with plenty of practical content that you can use to make your business practice perfect. Well, this is an absolute first for the podcast. There are four of us on here today. So good luck, listeners, for matching names and faces and voices. I've got the absolutely wonderful team from Everyday Independence in the room or in the virtual room today. Ingrid Cole, Mal Healy and Leanne Healy. Welcome, guys.
Thank you for having us, Kathy.
So if I do a bit of a roll call and each of you say hello and what your role is, that will help listeners kind of match the rest of the conversation. Mal, how about you head off? What's your job?
G'day, Kathy. So my role's the operational side of the business. So anything that's non-therapy related or non-people related. So finance, facilities, all the stuff that Leanne and Ingrid don't want to do.
Like the tech stuff, plugging things in and downloading this and making that look pretty.
Yeah, that's it.
All righty. Okay. So, Ingrid, what's your role?
Hi, Kathy. I'm a physiotherapist and I'm the Director of People and Culture at Everyday Independence. So my job is to make sure that we find awesome people to join our team and to make sure that they really enjoy being here and can deliver really strong outcomes to people with a disability.
And Leanne, I'm going to introduce you as OT of the Year because you were probably hoping I was going to forget that bit.
Leanne would have introduced herself as OT of the Year. I just didn't want to
give her that chance. But OT of the Year, Leanne Healy, what's your role?
So I wear a clinical excellence hat. So my role is to shape the practice model, and then to look at the training and the competency of the therapist to be able to work within that model. So the model that we work in, which we can talk about later, is a social model. So it's a bit of a shift for a lot of people. So the training and development around that has been really critical.
Now, the reason that there's three of you leading this machine is going to become apparent. Who wants to describe what Everyday Independence looks like at the moment? And I've got my arms right out wide to the side on this one. Who wants that job?
Mal looked at me. So Everyday Independence, we support people with a disability to reach their full potential and to enjoy an everyday life. So we do that by building on what is working and creating changes in areas that are not by delivering OT, physio and speech pathology. So Kathy, probably since the last time I've spoken with you, we have significantly grown. On August the 12th.
Such a surprise.
We will have 232 people in our organisation and very proud because all 232 of those people, we believe, share that same vision that I articulated at the beginning of explaining what Everyday Independence does. So that's been a real focus of ours for the last few years, is that everybody working towards the same goal and the same mission.
And whereabouts geographically are all your services nowadays?
So we've got 14 sites, Kathy. We're focused on Victoria and New South Wales. So in Victoria we have a Melbourne presence, so there's 7 sites in Melbourne, and our goal in Melbourne was to be no more than 20 minutes away from a participant, and I think we're pretty close to achieving that, as well as some of the key rural areas of in Barwon, Ballarat, Bendigo and Albury. And in New South Wales, we're in Newcastle. That was our first NDIS site. And we have 4 sites in Sydney. So in Sydney, we're probably half an hour from any participant.
Depending on the traffic.
I think it takes at least half an hour to do anything in Sydney.
Yeah, good point.
Wow. So give us a little clue about the growth you've had even just in the last 12 months.
Again, Mal's looking at me. So I think in the last 12 months, we've grown from 112 people to, as I said, as of August, 232 people. So that's welcoming occupational therapists, physios and OTs to our organisation, but also really building support teams in our organisation to be able to support the therapists to deliver their best work and to really communicate and advocate on behalf of the participant to be able to receive the services that they need to reach their goals.
And virtually all of your work is participants with NDIS funding, as I understand it. But what we all know now is that it takes a really, really different way of working under the NDIS, certainly one of agility and resilience with the constant changes. But what have you seen by way of change needed to deliver services to participants?
I mentioned earlier that we work within a social model of disability, and for a lot of experienced therapists, shifting from a medical or a rehab, a psychosocial model.
Traditional medical model, yeah.
So shifting across to a social model has really been a big jump, because when you're working in a social model, you're looking at building capable environments around people. So that's not just physical environments, but it's social environments, it's the people that they're communicating with, and it's really viewing that that disability is a social construct. So historically, I think therapists have assessed the person with a disability. That's the person who has a problem. Our job is to fix or minimise that problem. And then when that person's problem has resolved, then they might be able to join the community or join different groups or do different things. So the focus really is on the person and the person's problem. But when you're working in a social model, it's working with everybody that's around the person. And I know that we talk a lot about capacity building. But, you know, capacity building is not training and education. It's truly building capacity of people so that they, you know, around confidence and self-efficacy. So that's probably been the biggest shift for people. Mm.
Where have you got great information about progressing towards the social model of disability? I hear people kind of giving it lip service, and they've read a couple of articles. Where have you guys dug in and got that good content?
We went right back to basics and looked at a lot of the work around person-centred practice. So we actually went right back and we changed our language, we changed our reporting formats. We changed. We also became a person-centred organisation from within, with the way that we work with our team members. But it was person-centred practice, which probably we were really inspired by the work by Helen Sanderson. So that was a starting point for us. But we had to roll that out in a fairly intensive way across the team.
And what have you heard from therapists as they've shifted from a pretty familiar medical type practice into something that is a lot more contemporary and person-centered? What have you heard? I'm sure you've heard positives and a bit of resistance as well.
I think some of the positives have been that just it's much more of a shared responsibility around goal achievement. I think when you're working in an expert model, you go into a session and you're thinking, this person, I'm going to support this person to change, and that is my job, and that is my responsibility. But when you're working in a person-centered way, it's you go in there with no set agenda, and you're working on the goals that are important and meaningful for that person. It's not goals that are based on what your assessment score sheet says.
Or they're not even OT goals or speech therapy goals.
They're person goals. Yeah. So a lot of people, if you're doing that well, you get incredible outcomes. So I think the therapists have really valued getting greater impact and feeling like they're having greater impact for people. And certainly if we look at Cochrane results of satisfaction and performance, mm-hmm. that people are self-rating, that the impact is greater when they're obviously working on goals that are important to them. But the negative side of it is that people like to go into sessions with very, highly planned, the sessions being planned. I mean, we were continually being asked, where's the assessment form? Where can I print out the assessment form? I need to take in an assessment form. So I think just having to go in and meet people where they were at, was a source of frustration for people because they felt like they didn't have a lot of control over that session.
They didn't have their expert known tools with them to sort of start, and that I guess it's a mind shift, isn't it, to go in with a framework of operating but curiosity about where it's going to start and end.
And it certainly shaped our teams, Kathy, because we've been on this journey now since about 2015, and there's certainly been people that worked in our organisation and that's not the model in which they wanted to work. So for some people it hasn't been the model and they've needed to seek employment elsewhere or seek a different role in our organisation. So we've done a lot of work in being not only person-centred with participants but also person-centred in the way that we recruit, attract and retain people and really looking at, well, what is the right job for them? And sometimes that's been not at everyday independence. So we've experienced some workforce churn like everybody else in the disability sector and industry has, but really fine-tuning about, well, what is our employee value proposition, not just in the terms of the way in which we deliver a social model to disability, but also the way in which we train and develop and function as a team.
So run us through what a person-centred organisation really looks like, please.
Do you want to start? So Mal and I are currently doing a person-centred leadership training program. So Mal's just done a lot of work in that space. Do you want to talk about that?
I suppose, Kathy, we start with the person in the middle and whether that's a participant or the staff member, and we'd like to think that our organisational structure is tipped upside down, where the role of the managers and even our role as directors is really to ensure that there's an environment where the staff member can...
I'm going to have to correct you now. Team member.
Team member. I'm just about breaking out in hives. Team member.
Team member. That's my
It's all right now. No one's listening. It's fine. It's just us. Just us at the bar.
Yep. Okay, take two. So with our team members, as directors, our role is to provide an environment where the team members feel like they've got the resources and the motivation to support the participant as much as possible. So I think philosophically that's really where we sit. That I don't know, Ingrid doesn't like the term that servant leadership, but that's certainly the philosophy that we have.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I agree. So it is that the team member is firmly at the centre, or the participant. But what does a person-centred organisation look like? We're really proud of the fact that all of the tools and all of the strategies and all of the capacity building supports that we use when we're working with participants in their natural environment are actually all of the same tools and strategies and capacity building supports that we use with our team members. So even our annual performance and salary reviews, for example, look very similar to the way that we would assess and build goals with somebody in the community, because at the end of the day, we're all trying to learn, we're all trying to develop a skill, and we're all working towards goals. So whether that's at a career level or a lifestyle level, so certainly that flow on effect happens right through our organisation and out into the people that we work with.
Ingrid, you mentioned before about an employer value proposition. I know what that is, and it's one of my favourite topics. What would you describe your EPV, EVP to be at Everyday Independence?
So we're currently working on that more at the moment because with our person-centred journey, the EVP is really a person-centred approach to recruitment and employment. So even at the time of assessing a candidate, we sit down with them and we understand what's important to them, what do people like and admire about them, and how best to support them. And really, if we can shape a role within the context of the business requirements, we're really able to support that person in their employment. I think everyday independence is certainly a place to come if you want to grow, learn and develop. So we are unashamedly a career destination of choice. So it is about coming here and building your career. It's about coming here and learning or further extending your skills working in the disability sector. So there's all of those high impact attributes that we look for around a growth mindset, a can-do attitude, a quest for learning that we would hope that our employee value proposition can meet. I certainly think in the last year too, we've seen incredible investment but also advancement in clinical excellence and also the way in which our teams support each other, and scale's given us that as well. So having nearly 250 people means that there's always somebody around to support you, to have a conversation with, to work with, bounce ideas off. And then there's always the participants, Kathy. I mean, we're out there getting the most incredible outcomes for people with a disability. We were just talking today about somebody who came to us, I think, maybe 2 years ago. They're now using an eye gaze machine. Oh, that's not the term. What is it? Eye gaze what? Eye gaze technology, and they're actually now feeding themselves and now looking at them being able to manually operate their own wheelchair, which is something that was nobody thought was possible 3 years ago.
Sounds like independence to me. Who feels brave enough to talk about recruitment and workforce, or do we really need wine for that one?
No, it's front and centre of what we do every day. Yeah. So I think all three of us are probably brave enough to talk about it. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we've been on a really steep learning curve. I've always come from the idea, I mean, I just make an assumption that everybody comes to Everyday Independence and they are just thirsty for knowledge, that they will work tirelessly to
How's that working out for you, Leanne?
And that they're, you know, that just the fact that they are getting great outcomes and learning lots and lots and lots of information, surely that is enough. So it's been a fairly steep learning curve for me to really understand and appreciate how important that relatedness piece is at work. So I think I would have to say probably over the last 12 months, I think we've been much more aware of it, and just probably in the last 6 months, we really have made huge inroads into the how important relatedness is within the workplace. And I think if you are going to achieve that, then people need time. So they need time to be able to do deep thinking work. They need time to reflect. It's not just time with somebody else and reflecting with somebody else. They actually just need to be able to sit and take in what's been going on for them in the week. So I think in terms of value proposition, look, I believe if you've worked with Everyday Independence for a year, I think you could work nearly anywhere, and I absolutely believe that. I think that what you learn is incredible, but I think what we've been able to do now is weave in through in a person-centered way, really weave in the importance of relatedness and friendships and weave that into the workplace, which has been a really positive move.
With the trajectory of doubling your team every year, are you guys seriously thinking of opening your own university?
sort of.
Sort of, yes.
This week I've been looking at all of the e-learning platforms, and we certainly are going to go down that track of e-learning and creating a whole lot of courses internally. And we've had lots of conversations with the university about some of our concerns related to work readiness. And, you know, we still get comments from therapists about to graduate to say, oh, well, the university have said to us that the best place to start off is in a hospital.
Oh, gosh, I know. Ingrid and I have had tearful text messages on this.
So we're still trying to break that down, and I do think that the tertiary organisations are much more open to that. And at the OT conference, there was a lot of discussion around that. But definitely, we workforce development and training is something that we're very very focused on, especially a graduate. Or an 18-month graduate year with some formalised training.
And it's something that we've heavily invested in. So we have a Off to a Flying Star program where everybody that joins our organisation goes through quite an intensive 3-month training program. But we've really had to shape that too, because that looks very different for a new graduate to perhaps an experienced clinician that is now moving into working in a social model of disability. So what I think we're really proud of is that somebody can actually come into everyday independence, and we now actually have all the supports and the structures and some really contemporary platforms to support people to work with people with a disability and get great outcomes.
Wonderful. Absolutely, absolutely love it. So I don't think we can kind of progress too much further without having a bit of a chat about the NDIS. You should see the eye contact that is going on right now, listeners. I don't even know what question to put to you about the NDIS. Let's maybe start with the highlights. Where are the good bits in the NDIS? Let's just take the context of the last 12 months. Where are the gems?
From my perspective, I just love that we're supporting people that haven't had therapy for many years,
whether it's
either forever or it's a 16-year-old school kid that hasn't had therapy for the last 10 years, and just the benefits that one or two or half a dozen therapy sessions can provide that people. So I think that's the real positive, that we're seeing people for the first time, and in a very short period we're able to have an amazing impact on their, you know, on their life. But certainly for me.
Yeah.
I think, certainly there's challenges, but for us it's been on the whole a positive experience. But I think we've always worked in an individualised funding model, so we didn't perhaps have to make some of the changes that perhaps other organisations had to make in entering the NDIS. We were also very lucky to be in both areas of trial, so Newcastle and Geelong, and then we were able to build on our learnings in working in the NDIS as it entered full scheme rollout across Australia. So really for us, the NDIS has brought enormous opportunity because it has enabled us to scale and then deliver all of those things that we've talked about already. So things like a clinical excellence program and Off to a Flying Start program, being able to support people in their early career because we've got scale and we've got other people in our organisation, which was really tricky to do before the NDIS because organisations of our type were much smaller. So it has brought for us an enormous opportunity to develop a workforce that can deliver a social model and to deliver that to thousands of people that, yes, either A, had substandard supports or no supports, or at least offering them a different type of support perhaps compared to what they were getting.
Yeah, yeah.
And, Kathy, I've really loved the fact that the NDIS have pretty much said these are the rules and haven't been too prescriptive about implementation. So because we invest so much in innovation, and we've got a lot of we have a lot of resources that are not working directly with people, but working in spaces of innovation, and subject matter experts that are working on innovation within certain areas. So for us, that's been fantastic. It's regulators who say you have to fill out this assessment form and you have to write the report this way and you have to use these assessments. I mean, they're the organisations that we really struggle with these days.
Yeah.
So yeah. I've loved that about the NDIS.
Yeah. And then what about the challenges that it's presenting to you as directors and maybe for clinicians and also for participants?
Certainly from as directors, there's been a couple of challenges really from the IT platform and probably not having systems that are robust enough for a scheme the size that it's grown to. So I think that's certainly been an immediate challenge and one that we're working through and the NDIS are aware of, and I'm really confident that in a couple of years they'll have a really good system. But I think in the early days that was a real challenge, and for many people that was really the first exposure with the NDIS, with some of the technical interface, and both providers and participants were, I think their first taste wasn't that great because of that.
Yeah, and that portal debacle of X number of years ago is still burnt on the hard drive of many, I suspect.
Yes.
Yeah. Where else are there challenges for you guys?
I think that the absolutely appalling way that the NDIS managed assistive technology in home mods was so challenging to the point where it really impacted morale. There were many people that were deregistering and moving away from the scheme purely because of the issues related to AT and home mods, which should have been anticipated. So that was an enormous frustration for everybody, I think, and is it's significantly better now. But that went on for a long time.
Yeah, I think it's perhaps coming out of the bottom of the curve, a little bit of a glimmer, but I would go so far as to say that really challenged human rights and life as such. Yeah.
And when you are, because our philosophy is an outcome is not just completing an equipment request form, and an outcome is not just when a piece of equipment arrives at someone's house. I mean, that's when the real therapy starts, around embedding that solution into a, supporting
lifestyle,
someone to achieve the participation goal. So, there were lots of fracturing of relationships with families as well, because they're saying, well, the OT hasn't come back and the OT hasn't got the equipment. And, I mean, that was very challenging.
Yeah. Ingrid, any challenges that you want to share up?
Look, I think for many of us at EI, we've really tried to approach it with a long-term view. So, not dissimilar to Medicare, it took 10 to 15 years to come to fruition. And I think there's an enormous amount of goodwill within our teams to really take that long-term view and not get too bogged down in the drama and the frustrations of the day-to-day. I think one thing that certainly challenges us all is that perhaps those families that have good advocacy or really strong advocacy are probably faring quite well under the NDIS, but for those people that don't have good advocacy or good supports around them, that there really are some significant gaps in service which can obviously impact on their long-term future. So it is about working in a really supportive environment to support each other. There's probably some compassion fatigue and things certainly out there, but we're certainly trying to take that long-term view.
So what do you think it's going to look like in 5 years' time? All of it, life, the universe, the NDIS?
Well, it's incredible how quickly 5 years has gone. So, Kathy, I'm based in Geelong and we're now into our sixth year of the NDIS and we're still seeing people get their first plan. So I think we've probably underestimated how long this social reform is going to take. But I probably similar to what Leanne has said is it is quite exciting that it is now up to the market to innovate and take opportunities and take risks. And I've certainly seen a lot more collaboration rather than competition happening over the last few years because it is just such an enormous opportunity for everybody. So I hope that we see some really different service delivery models, some different things happening, some great entrepreneurship. I think it's a really exciting space. I certainly hope that we see more graduates and allied health professionals wanting to come and join us in this space. That's certainly going to be a key area of focus for us over the next 2 years to really show people how they can have such a meaningful occupation, because we know that Generation Y is looking for cause, community and career, and I think that the NDIS offers that to everybody.
Yeah. Well, Leanne and Mal, what do you think the next 5 years are going to look like?
I think providers are going to be much more challenged, Kathy, around getting outcomes and demonstrating outcomes for the investment that the scheme's making. So it's a $22 billion investment, and I think we all have the challenge and should rise to the challenge of really
delivering
being able to
on it.
Outcomes and deliver on those outcomes. So things like outcomes-based pricing, I think will be much more of a topic and much more of a challenge for us as providers.
And I think one of the points that I wanted to make based on our experience with Barwon and with Newcastle, who were the two trial sites, is that, and this is hope for everybody out there, is that everyone's just in a click, they've got this great routine at work and everybody in the area within that sector, they all understand the same language, whereas the trial sites are so stressful. So there is hope. I mean, you do get to a point where, everyone just goes to work and it's just a much more relaxed routine for people.
You're saying that's on the back of maturity in the areas, in the neighbourhoods.
And I think the exciting thing for us will be that around true interdisciplinary teamwork. So that is a very sophisticated piece of work, actually working as a true interdisciplinary team where you might get therapy funding, a certain amount of therapy funding, and then the team just comes in and out quite seamlessly around what the person needs, where you haven't got silos and you haven't got individual therapy goals. So I think that's definitely going to be the way to get the best outcomes for people. So I think, I'm hoping that we see a lot more of that.
That's exciting. Yeah, absolutely. Lights me up. That's good. Good, good. So what can you tell us about the future developments of everyday independence in the next little while? What are you up to that you don't want anyone to know about?
Certainly one of the things for us, Kathy, is about growth. And it's not growth necessarily from a business point of view, but we do feel a really strong responsibility to make the NDIS work and for us to be really part of that solution. So when we talk about growth, it's as much around we think we've got the model that works and we just want to get it out to as many people as we can. So certainly that growth aspect, more people, supporting more participants is just going to be a way of life for us over the next 2 or 3 years.
And particularly people that are hard to reach. We would really like to think that the model that we have can reach some of those people that are tricky to reach.
And then there's a real to achieve that growth, there's a really strong focus on our workforce. So we know that there is a workforce shortage. but we really do want to be industry leaders in workforce development, and we're looking at a number of initiatives to do that. But really attracting a workforce and building a workforce that can deliver on that success of the NDIS that Mal spoke about. So we're already seeing people within our organisation that are already starting to think about their career future and their workforce future. And so how do we continue to develop those people so that they can continue with everyday independence and really perhaps increase its reach across Australia?
I hear about career pathways in organisations all of the time, and I like to hear that because it implies that maturity of the whole sector, if you want to call it a sector, and that private practice is growing up, and that it's we're now business owners and organisations, and the language is growing up with the size of the business. And people are looking to work in the private sector for their whole careers, but there's got to be places for them to go right up through to, you know, senior leadership and so on and so forth. Is that kind of what you've got in mind, that you'll really be able to offer a really vibrant, encouraging workplace regardless of where someone is at in their career?
Do you want to answer that?
There you go.
Yes, we will be, you know, we're starting to gather data and we're going to have a big research arm over the next 12 months, because we want to gather data to be able to inform the scheme to say that, if you want this outcome, if this, you know, for this person to achieve this outcome will cost this much money in therapy. I mean, we've got a situation at the moment where the scheme is telling therapists how much it's going to take to achieve a certain outcome. And, I'd like to be able to, you know, we would like to get that data so that we can inform the scheme around.
Yeah, real-life benchmarks for equipment and participation outcomes, yeah.
But that will also mean that in terms of roles within the organisation, that there will be opportunity for research roles, for leadership roles, and specialty roles, training roles. Hmm.
And we certainly find that even as early as sitting down with people at their six-month review, people are already starting to think, well, what does my career look like in Horizon 1, Horizon 2, Horizon 3? And we have a very clear structured pathway right through from graduate clinician right through to advanced practice clinician. We also have our internal leadership program as well. So certainly I think it is about not just developing people for a life at everyday independence, but developing people to then be able to go out into the sector or potentially other sectors and be successful. So if we were known as an organisation that, you know, could really prepare people for their future careers, that would be success for us.
I'm mindful of time. What else would you like listeners to know about what you do and why you do it?
You've got silence, Kathy.
I love silence. It's one of my favourite sounds. Take your time.
It's the coach in you.
I think one of our learnings has been, and I wish that we had have learnt this earlier, is around really the when referrals come in to the organisation, and our growth was very, very quick, but making sure that therapists work within scope, and that means that you really have to understand the needs of the person who requires the service, and ask the right information. And that's why we've invested in the front line. And I think just if therapists are able to work within the scope of their practice while still being able to push their edges with the right level of coaching and mentoring, then that is the absolute perfect match-up for the participant and the therapist to get great outcomes. So I think we've nailed that. I would have really liked to have nailed that 3 years ago.
I agree, because we often refer to Everyday Independence 2.0. We're a very, very different organisation to what we were 3 years ago. I mean, we were caught up in that tornado that I think perhaps everybody else was with the introduction of the NDIS, but we've certainly chipped away. We've put systems in place, we've put processes in place, and it's a very different place to work and to be a part of now. And I think that would be great for our listeners to know that you know, evolution is just so important, certainly whilst our whole sector is transforming. We've taken some risks. Some have paid off, some we haven't paid off. And I feel so extremely grateful to have been able to take those risks. But, yes, I think that Everyday 2.0, and I'm sure we'll evolve to 3.0 and 4.0 as well.
I hope so.
It is a different place now, Kathy. Yeah.
Mal, what else would you like listeners to know?
Certainly new grads, I'd love for them to look at the private sector as a place that they can start their career. As Leanne said, we often get feedback from the universities around pushing new grads to a hospital setting or a not-for-profit setting. But I think it's a great environment for someone to be challenged, to learn new skills and you know, seriously start a long-term career. So, you know, if there's any new grads listening, I'd love for them to jump on the website and check us out.
Finish the pitch. Give us the complete website. People are pulling their cars over as we speak.
www.everydayind.com.au.
Go, Mel.
And to add to that, you've got a really, really good join the team page. Like, it's not as though people just go and get a quick little one or two sentences. You've gone to a ton of effort to make it really inviting and interesting and really getting people to think about what they can be doing next to join you. I've never told you that, but it's really cool. Well done.
Thank you. And the exciting part about that is it's changing weekly. We're in this sort of state of flux where we want to put up the positions that are available on the website, Kathy, but actually we always have positions available. So we're bringing on 30 new team members every 8 weeks at the moment. They're our projections. So if people wanted to come and work with us, it's that person-centred approach to recruitment starts with that. Would that organisation be a good fit for me? Yeah. And then I think the other thing that's we're excited about is that, you know, when we look at our clinical excellence, we go global. We search internationally about what's the best. We want to be the best at therapy in the world. But we're also going global on workforce development as well. So we're looking outside of Australia. But we're also now in a position where we can do supervised practice for people that have done their stage one audit. So we are also really think that there's a dormant workforce in Australia that just given just the right supports that they'd be able to come and join our team and really add to the diversity of our team as well. So, yeah, it's lovely feedback to receive that about the Join Us page, and we will keep updating it.
Mm. All righty. Well, we're going to have to get you back in for a bit of a catch-up next year. Are you guys up for a reheat next year and an update?
Definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. All right, I'm going to give you the very last say, maybe a statement from each of you about business and perhaps what you've learnt personally from business.
I think my big learning is from a big sister, Leanne, where she said that if you...
OT of the year, that Leanne.
Read the back of my cape.
I think her philosophy was, if we do the right thing by the participant, everything else will fall into place. And she still has that mantra around, it's all about the participant. If we do that well, everything else will follow. And to date, that's been pretty true.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to really piggyback on that, but it is really, we have had a real focus on culture And if we can get the culture right and we can support people to do their best work, they're going to really drive really strong outcomes for the participant. And it's not just the NDIS brings this opportunity to not just survive, but also now for all Australians to thrive. And so I feel so incredibly grateful to be able to do that as my job. So that would probably be my parting words.
Leanne, OT of the year.
OT of the year. Look, I always say on any given day that we need to do the best we can with what we have today. So I think that I kind of say that to myself most days.
To keep me sane.
To keep it all together and looking pretty. Well done, guys. Thank you so much for your time, and we will definitely see you in 2020, and we will enjoy all that you do and the impact that you guys are absolutely determined to make on your team and participants and all the rest. So big thanks from me.
Thanks for having us along today.
Nice to see you again.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. For show notes and other resources, please visit practicemadeperfectpodcast.com. While you are there, you can subscribe for future episodes and continue your business adventure with me. And please be sure to share this and other episodes with your friends and colleagues.